Hello and welcome to We're All Gonna Die and Other Fun Facts, a semi-regular, occasionally amusing, and rarely funny series of conversations on a random topic. This episode is entitled For the Love of Extreme Personalities, and it's about the, how about having the eccentric and insane in our lives, I think, and all of the fun that comes with that. And so our guest for this episode, who is, I think herself somewhat of an extreme personality, but is certainly an extreme personality magnet. If there's an extreme personality inertia, I think this human being tends to, you know, have things kind of sticking to her face. You know, like if you were magnetic, you just get hit in the face with scissors all the time.
Yes.
You have the extreme people personality thing equivalent to that. And of course, your name is Miss Lori Hauser. Lori, say something to yourself, damn it. About yourself, damn it.
You attract what you are. I'll admit it.
So why are you so crazy, then?
I'm an extreme personality.
Yeah, so why so crazy?
You know, my craziness is I promote people to be themselves. Purely 100 themselves. 100% mm-hmm. themselves. And when you do that, you open the door for them to be that. And if they don't have a sense of control, or if it's part of them they've never explored, they're going to go all the way with it. You know, they're going to, you know, they might not realize they have it in them. And then suddenly there it is.
Good point. Yeah. Yeah. So then is everybody a little crazy, or?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I believe everybody has something. Either they're hiding it, or it's obvious. They're obvious about it. Everybody has something. I absolutely believe that.
Mm. I got nothing.
You got nothing.
This has been a great podcast. our sponsor, Swanson's, Hungry and Dinners. Now, let's get into how I came up with this idea then, and kind of talk back to what you just said. Because I think it's important to note, when we're doing this, and how we're doing this, and how we met, and all of that. And that was the subject of the last podcast, like 10 million years ago, when I posted one about doing theater.
Yeah.
But, you know, our lives have changed a little bit since then, because the man that we both, I think, grew up under, I guess, as a mentor, Mr. Kenny Rosinski, passed away.
Yeah.
Last month. And it was something that he said is where the title of this came from. And it was in this intro to the fine arts course that I had with him, and we were doing a unit on opera. And he quoted somebody as saying that opera was the last vestige of extreme people and extreme characters and extreme personalities. And how wonderful that is to still have that. And then he said, you know, in comparison to a very conformist student body that was at St. Francis. And he, you know, said, and all the girls, they wear, you know, shoulder-length brown hair parted right down the middle. And when he said right down the middle, he actually karate chopped himself at the top of the head in class. And there was, you know, 8, 10, 15 young ladies in that room with shoulder-length straight hair that was parted right down the middle. Like, it was just like, this is what, you know, and all the guys, if they weren't wearing jeans, they were in khakis, you know? I mean, and they had the hat that went down over their eyes, you know?
Yeah.
And that was sort of it. And I think about what all culture sort of demands from people.
Yeah.
In an almost invisible, unspoken way. Yet that's not what humanity is.
No.
And I think we live under this really false idea of what people are. And yeah, that's the extreme personality thing. I think that what you said about craziness is, yeah. I mean, a buddy of mine, we ran some errands after work today, and we ended up at Office Depot. And everybody in that store tonight was completely dysfunctional in one way or another.
Mm-hmm.
It was really obvious. And we walked out, and we had to go to the pet conglomerate store next to it. And it was sort of like, I said to my friend, I was like, everybody in there was really weird, right? He's like, yeah, dude, that was like an episode of The Twilight Zone. It's like we don't expect it, or it's not part of our reality, when maybe that is our reality. And I think that's the era when, you know, we see movies with normal people in them, mostly.
Yeah.
You know, or they're superheroes.
Yeah.
You know,
that's... Well, even, but most of the superhero personalities were developed out of craziness. It was their, you know, it was their dark side, or it was something that happened to them as a child.
And I think, and that's where it's sort of okay now.
Yeah.
You know, Robert Downey Jr. is Iron Man. It's
narcissist.
Okay.
Complete narcissist. But he's wonderful. We love him.
You know, Hugh Jackman is Wolverine. That shit, you know. But just like normal people. And I will say, like, that's one of the things I really liked about American Hustle. I got to see that. And yeah. that was extreme 70s New Jersey, New York, Italian people. Like, yes. I was just like, I grew up with that, you know? And I was like, oh, that's what that was like, and the fashion and the music and whatever. But, you know, it's almost like, you know, everybody, you know, I guess you had Urkel in sitcoms, but it's almost like we should be these, like, sitcom-y Midwesterners. It's like, that's what we expect.
Yeah.
And then, you know, and we can't handle weird when we get it.
Well, the thing was, is when I would watch the sitcoms, I would watch them and be like, who lives like this? Because my family's not like this. We don't do this kind of crap. We don't talk about that. We talk about this. We do this. We do this. And I know that you said that this, you know, this normalness, this, you know, the desire to be normal is, you know, an invisible force. It's not. It's systems. It's because other people act that way. I was raised by 50s parents. I broke some boundaries. I did some. I came home with, you know, like a nose ring and dyed hair and weird friends. And, you know, they're still living in the 50s. And so it was a big deal to them. But in all actuality, my parents, and I'll say it, you know, they were strange people. They had their oddities.
Yeah.
Nothing damaging, nothing horrible. They were not abusive. They were not bad. Didn't mean to be, certainly. Mm-hmm. But they were odd. They were very odd. And I was, you know, their kid. So, of course, I was going to be odd.
Yeah.
And then I met Kenny and his family, and it was kind of like they seemed normal to me.
Yeah. Well, I think, you know, the thing about Kenny and family and Bonnie and, you know, was, I think their complete self-awareness.
Yeah.
Which was very much, because I grew up in the very much the same way. My mom is a 50s mom. But yeah, both my parents themselves are very strange, very eccentric people.
Mm-hmm.
And my father sort of opened that door to sort of like, be your own person. I don't give a shit, you know? Or I don't give a shit what people think of me. I mean, that was like, that's the voice of my father in my head.
Yeah.
Who gives a shit? Just do it, you know?
Yeah.
Like, kind of, that was him. And it sort of opened that door, but like, yeah, meeting Kenny Zuzki just flung that door wide open.
Right.
That, you know, and then I think the other thing too about Kenny and family, because Bonnie's great too, is, how that idea that you could turn your life into kind of a work of art itself.
Yeah.
And that you can have rituals and you can have ceremony and you can have things that you create. I remember Bonnie saying that about their house, which, you know, being in Loretto, Pennsylvania, going up to their house, it's like this other world, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And somebody's like, well, we just love your house. And she said, well, we just like to surround ourselves with things we like.
Yeah.
And certainly the house that I live in now and the next one that I'll have at some point is very much a part of that.
Yeah.
You know, and so it was this sort of indulgent. But the other thing that he taught was, I think, you think with doing theater, he let everybody in.
Yeah.
If you showed up, if you were going to show up regularly, you were in.
You were in. All you got to do is show up.
You could be difficult and crazy and whatever and function in that environment.
Yeah.
Which was not, I mean, that's not what happens you know, in retail environments or, you know.
No, and, you know, as you get...
Or, you know, going to Office Depot, and it's like those people were barely making it.
Yeah.
You know, the old guy who wrote the check who had like 8 tissues that he littered across the counter in front of us and then finished writing the check and then put all the half-used tissues back in his pocket. It was great. But just sort of like, ah, that's weird. And you're expecting, at one point I was expecting like someone, the kid who was rung him up who had like, you know, who was the, he was a mixture of like Napoleon Dynamite and like the pimply teenager from The Simpsons.
Yeah.
I was expecting at one point to say, I'm going to have to get my manager or I'm going to have to call security or something on this guy. And I was like, this close. It was this close. And, you know, there is that like very slim margin of error now. You know, like you subscribe to Gawker on Facebook and it's like, oh, and that person got tased and that person got shot for being weird.
Weird.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is where we are now in security culture world.
Absolutely.
You know, but he was that, is okay to be that and do it.
Yeah.
And as much as we would hate people and we would hate it sometimes, it was this environment where people could just kind of be themselves and do work and make art and whatever. And he really reveled in that, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. You know. Well, and when you attract extreme personalities,
yes,
you open the doors that wide and say, all are welcome. You know, I've certainly done it. When you open the doors that wide, the more extreme, the better, because you begin to get bored. You do. There's a sense of boredom. But then there's also, you know, you have to make the difference between, you want the mad people, you want the weird people, you want the off people. You know, at any point, you don't know if any point in time they're going to go crazy. There is a difference between being a mad one and being a crazy one. And it's the crazy ones you try to avoid. If they do come around, you just kind of not set them off to where they go crazy. Because when that point happens, you're done. You know, you are now going to be one of their victims, one of their people that's going to, you know, they're going to have to blame in their lives because it was your fault. It was your fault. You know, and you didn't do anything but open your door and give them a place and give them a way to need. And I know Kenny had a gambit of stories in the years that I've been, you know, doing arts and putting myself out there. I have so many stories of the ones that went crazy. The mad are still around. We're all still around doing exactly what we do. And then there's the ones that just fall right off.
Yeah, which, I mean, that is, you know, a thing. It's in higher ed, too.
Yeah, you know, it's everywhere.
Well, I think the things, I think, with the doing the theater and doing the arts, and I think higher ed, too, is a legitimized way to be a little off.
Yeah,
you know,
I mean,
the job that I do, especially the research component of it, it is really important to be obsessive.
Mm-hmm.
It is vital for me to be obsessive about things.
Yeah.
And, you know, I am getting ready not cutting that out.
All right.
Yeah. sorry, excuse me, folks. Again, if you have earbuds, you know... Sorry about that. I just sneezed on your eardrums. But, you know, there's that thing about, you know, defining that obsessiveness or that weirdness or that eccentricity or that common, you know, or perpetual discontent or whatever the hell it is that sort of motivates some people in my profession. It's just a legitimized way to be a little off.
Yeah.
In a lot of cases.
Yeah.
And that's interesting, but yeah, there is that, like, people who just go over the fucking edge.
Right in front of you. Yeah. They'll go right over the edge. I forgot the manual on this one. I just do art. You know, that's I only do theater. Yeah, and suddenly...
I got some papers to grade, yeah.
Right.
Yeah, which, I mean, the environment I'm in now, professionally, is, like, really cool. But where I went to graduate school...
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God! And some of those folks are still there.
Yeah.
You know, students and faculty, actually. I mean, just, you know, when I started graduate school, I was like, wow, this is theater again.
Yeah.
This, doing theater prepared me socially for this other experience because, and we did have a person who was a missing person. I mean, we thought she had died. We thought, you know, she was at the bottom of a lake somewhere. You know, it's one heck of a story. I mean, she left, you know, there's some semester left and then a bunch of things happened, you know, and we know this person is alive and we think relatively safe and okay now, but it was terrifying. And a good friend of mine, really good friend, somebody who really mentored me and guided me through the process of getting my doctorate, said to me, Matt, this degree will do one of two things to you. It will break you or it will shatter you. And this is like one of the most painfully sensible people, you know, that I know in life that I like to mess with and make fun of because she's so sensible.
Yeah.
Yet that's what she said to me. And that was someone who had gone through the process.
Because and she probably either broke or shattered. And
well, she broke.
Getting sense.
The person who went missing got shattered. She said, that's what happens.
Yeah.
Those are the people who get shattered.
Yeah.
The breakers are the people who
end up with sense. On. They end up with sense. Not always. Well.
They end up with a really important degree and a God complex. That's a possibility, too.
Yeah.
Would you think doing the arts can do that to you as well?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Which, that's what you want with a person who's a little off. You want to give them a God complex. You want to give them some sort of natural permanent high where people admire them for it.
Right. Because in a society that would like to believe, and I do say this out loud, a society that would like to believe that it's functional needs to find functional things for people that they feel are dysfunctional. When in reality, if you're dysfunctional and you're already outside of the whole thing, you look on the inside and go, you know what, you're just as screwed up as I am. You know, okay, here's a perfect story. I'll use a perfect example.
Okay, no names.
And,
right?
Of course, I will lay my own life on the line here. And when I was what we fondly call the puzzle factory, I was in the nut house for 6 days.
Okay.
Seventh floor of a hospital. I'm sitting down at the end. I'm depressed. I'm done. I don't know what to think anymore. I look out the window. I'm trying to get some sense of emotion. What is the puzzle factory filled with depressed, Alzheimer's, rehab, fallen, broken, scared people? What is it looking over? A graveyard! Because it's exactly what you would want. Crazy, depressed, insane. Who are the thinking people? And this was exactly it. It was that moment where the social worker comes down the hall and I'm just like, I don't even know how to deal with myself at this point in time, and sits down next to me and says, what are you thinking? And I just turn around and look and I'm like, what are you thinking, putting all these people in a place where we're going to look at a graveyard? Does this make us feel better? Is this what you think? Because this is wrong. And now it becomes the other side. Like, who is the crazy one in this conversation? So, that's why we need extreme people. We need extreme thinkers. We need extreme personalities because those that think they're in that sacred, normal bubble that doesn't really exist need the other side to say, no, really, you're not normal, and here's why. Because this was a dumb thing. And you shouldn't have done something this dumb. but it was probably convenient in your budget, but it was dumb overall.
Well, and I think, too, I think in that same hospital, doesn't the cancer ward open up to that same graveyard?
If I'm thinking of
the same place? Yeah! Which is also one. No, that's some urban planning for you.
Right!
But,
so they're not thinking,
and... they put a hedge. You could put a big hedge.
Yeah.
Maybe we should plant a hedge.
Paint the windows. Do something. Don't let that there. Don't be dumb enough to think it's going to help anybody.
And I think it's the other thing, other part of this piece, and I think it's something we're also kind of systemically missing as a culture right now, this idea of empathy. You know, this idea that, you know, that is someone's truth, mm-hmm. even if that's an extreme personality. And to recognize that as a truth, whatever it is they're going through, saying, expressing, mm-hmm. and seeing some of yourself in that truth.
Yeah.
That's sort of true empathy.
Yeah.
And you think, again, I mean, in a theater environment, yeah, I mean, you're supposed to be other people.
Oh, well, they've...
You're supposed to like who you're being, no matter, even if you're the villain that show. You're supposed to like being evil.
Yeah.
You know? It's, you know, Andy Kaufman is the evil wrestler. You know, he loved playing that role. He loved it when people tried to spit on him.
Absolutely.
You know? And I think that's another part of this puzzle. It's one thing to have sort of crazy people or extreme people or eccentric people. Mm-hmm. Or I think people who... And maybe all those words seem too derogatory. I mean, what if it is people who just truly find their own way through life or their own aesthetic or their own... Who maybe do make their life a kind of art. And say, this is what I want to be.
Yeah.
And that's it.
And that's it.
You know, I want to dress in black every single day of my
life. Why not?
Life. Yeah, why the hell not?
Why not? And I think where it goes wrong is when we, you know, of course, with bullying and ridicule, and then you get older, and then it's, oh, it's a phase, and oh, it's going to stop, and then it doesn't stop, and then finally you get the idea that maybe it's you. You know, who does the breaking? Is it the rules that were set upon us once upon a time to say that this was wrong? Or is it the person finally just losing touch with reality? You know, like, who does the breaking?
Yeah.
Where does it rise from? You don't know. You know, you can't always buy psychology. Psychology is a science of the mind that helps people, yes. But it doesn't help the individual. It's a science. It's a generalization, and everybody's different.
Yeah.
And not everybody has the same cure.
Yeah.
So, extreme personalities, and I am one. You know,
yeah.
I compartmentalize. My personality is so big. I am several people in a day, and I'm okay with that. But most of us are. We don't acknowledge it, maybe. Like, oh, I was just at the office, you know, and then you go for your happy hour drinks, and then suddenly you're the dude at home watching sports, and, you know, and that's normal. But you've just been three different people, whether you realize it or not. You know, I'm, during the day, I'm... You know, I'm Lulu, and I wait on everybody, and I make everybody happy, and I enjoy doing that. I come home, and I'm Mom, and I make sure that the dinner is on the table, and the bills are paid, and the kid is happy, or if there are any concerns, they need to be addressed, and, you know, I'm my daughter's mom.
Yeah.
When I perform, I am the Mad Muse. I'm a poet. I rant. I talk about madness and extreme emotions and getting excited or getting depressed in the most extreme ways so that you can find the happy middle.
Mm. Yeah.
So, yeah, I'm three different people in a day sometimes. Sometimes more. And everybody is, but nobody looks at it that way.
Yeah.
It's normal.
It's definitely, you're right. I mean, it's the dirty secret of college professors that I have this persona that I project.
Yes.
That I am. That is a, a version of me that's just a little less rough around the edges.
Yes.
You know, but...
We all clean up to go out there and play nice.
Yes. Well, you know what, though? Again, though, it's part of the turning it into a living. I mean, a big part of my teaching persona is being obnoxious.
Yeah.
And that's a part of what works for me, is just letting that obnoxious, monstrous side of my personality...
There's...
But like the Disney Pixar version of it, out to play, you know, yeah. is a big part of what I do and how, you know, I'm like G.G. Allen, man. My stage show just balances me out, man.
Yeah, it does.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But of course, he said if he wasn't doing that, he'd be killing people. So, you know, I don't know if I'd be killing people, but.
You know, if it, during the day, you know, when I'm out amongst the big world, I am... delightful and wonderful and positive and happy, and I do feel those real things, and it's not like I'm faking it 100% all the time, but I can go home and close that door and be the most sarcastic, cynical, oh, you should have seen, you know, I can be that too, and in between there is balance. I do balance it, you know, in between there.
Well, can we go back to, though, can we go back to the attraction of having other extreme people in one's life and sort of the managing of that, especially when it does go a little batshit insane.
I still have yet to manage it. I still have yet to know how to handle it. I think this most recent, you know, we talked about it on the last radio show, I think. No, maybe we didn't.
No.
But the, you know, like the most recent episode, I think I handled beautifully. I went to work. I kept my job.
Yeah.
No matter what was done to me, there was no ramifications that I couldn't handle. I had good friends step up and say, oh, no, this is just...
Yeah.
You know, but I've been...
And, well, I guess we should clarify this a little bit.
Okay.
Well, what this was. I mean, again, this was someone... This was a theater friend. This was an art friend who...
It was, you know, it was one of those people that I opened up my life to, and I said, you know, here's a place. You know, I know you don't feel needed. And it was through theater that I met this person. It was through, here, I'm going to provide this space for you. Because this is what I love to do. This is what keeps me a part of the world. This is what I enjoy. And this is what it should be. This is a place for you to be, you know, to feel comfortable. Years go by. You know, we'll might as well just fast forward. I have moved. I've moved on with my life. This person and I are still talking. Suddenly, this person falls into a hole. I do it again. Open my door. Here's a space for you. Get your life together.
Mm.
Person goes on with life, meets a nice man, yada, yada, yada. Suddenly, you know, they get married. Suddenly, I get phone call. I don't know what's happening.
Mm.
You know, something has happened. And I, the phone call, of course, you know, came from the husband who didn't know this person as long as I had.
Mm.
And at that point in time, I had only heard ugly rumors about these episodes.
Mm.
So I'm thinking it's nothing. You know, like, oh, no big deal. I've seen people, you know, snap. No big deal. I see it all the time.
Yeah.
It happens all the time.
Yeah.
I'm an old
the
pro.
Werner Herzog thing. You know, that Werner Herzog, that knowing, you know, in that scene in Grizzly Man when Timothy Treadwell's flipping out.
Yeah.
And he's, I have seen flip outs on a movie set before. And I just, you know, he's talking about Klaus Kinski. He's talking about Klaus Kinski, you know. There's that, in My Best Fiend, that documentary, there's that great scene where he said he grew up in a boarding house with Klaus Kinski, who was one of the fellow boarders.
Yeah.
And the local theater critic, the local drama critic was there and they were eating dinner at this big table. And the critic says, oh, and I had a nice word about you. And Kinski had a minor role in this play. And Kinski flipped over the dinner table. You were a liar. I was magnificent. You know, and I was like, I've always wanted to do that.
Yeah.
You know, this is like, oh, that's how you can be.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't do that, but wow, wouldn't that be wonderful? Just once.
Just once.
Just once to flip a dining room table.
Sure. And you know what? Do it. Just don't hurt anybody. That's what I
well,
say.
Well, that's a
just
that's
do
the hard
thing. Just don't
you see,
hurt
but
anybody.
You see, Kinski wouldn't have cared about that.
Yeah.
Those people would have been collateral damage to his greatness.
Yeah.
Which, I guess that's, maybe that's one of the other dangerous things.
About maybe extreme personalities.
Extreme personalities is when someone becomes collateral damage to your greatness.
Oh, yeah.
Which absolutely. Is, I think, what this person was trying to do. But, sorry, continue.
Oh, no, no, story. Absolutely. Like, none of this would have been a problem. And I have to say, I don't really mind when people snap in a sense of, it doesn't really terrify me.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't make me nervous. The first thing is in that's in my head is, how can I possibly help? What can I do?
Which is, again, that's most people.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's a very opposite.
What can I do?
And then suddenly, it's a firefighter response.
You know, and then suddenly, you're the bad human being. You're the one that did this. Here comes this blame. Because that person in their head hasn't realized that they've lost their mind.
Mm-hmm.
Done some extreme things like, oh, rip their clothes off, run down the street, throw everything they own out into the bushes,
mm-hmm.
and then suddenly, it's your fault.
Yeah.
You stole this, you did this to me, la-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da, and the only thing you were doing was trying to help.
Yeah.
And that's when the extreme personality causes problems. And with me, even then, back in the day, it really wasn't a problem. But now I'm a mother.
Yeah.
There's that personality, there's that part of my personality that now is feed the child, care for the child, love the child, and I do love my child. To threaten my motherhood,
mm-hmm.
you know, to tell people, you should call Child Youth Services, she's a horrible mother. I was only trying to help. That's when it gets dangerous in my book. That's where that list is starting to grow. You know, my daughter's going to turn 18 someday. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
Remember, I'm an extreme human being, too, you know? Start counting.
Yeah.
You got 8 years, you know? Like,
which I guess is the other thing. It's like, you know, being in the arts and being compassionate is like this formula for having crazy in your wheelhouse.
Yeah.
Or arts, humanities, compassion.
It's
a deadly mix. Kids.
It is a deadly. Well, it's a great mix. It's a wonderful mix. And
it will
kill
you. It's like meth. It's like really good meth. It's like when you're doing the really good shit. Like, not like the cheap shit, but like the really good stuff when it's cooked right.
Right.
Don't do meth either. I'm sorry. No. But don't do meth.
Please don't do meth.
It's terrible. I've heard.
Because if they it's you. It's your fault. They'll be outside your door. It's your fault. Blame. Here comes the blame.
There comes the blame.
This is who I am, but it's your fault that it happened. Oh, well, shit. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I didn't realize that,
which,
you know,
I think that's, you know,
was a problem.
I watched over my winter solstice or whatever the hell it was, 24-hour party people.
Yeah.
And I was thinking about, you know, sort of music scenes, and because this blog always has to talk about music. We haven't talked about music yet, and it's 32 minutes into this thing. You know, Ian Curtis. I guess that's the other extreme. Ian Curtis, there's that great line in Deborah Curtis's biography of Ian, the lead singer of Joy Division. He was being admired for the things that were killing him.
Yeah.
And you know, this whole, you know, and that's the whole thing. It was just people who were in extreme person situations, and some of them were on drugs and some of them were not. And that, you know, people becoming rewarded for it, which is also part, I think, the arts and humanities thing.
Yeah.
It's monetized if you're really good at it.
Oh, yeah.
You
absolutely.
You know, I mean, imagine if, like, Morrissey, like, never met Johnny Marr. That never got together, and there was just him, and maybe he did have a band that, like, released a couple 7 inches that, like, some, like, obscure collectors were like, oh, dude, you hear these guys?
Mm.
You know, but they never, the Smiths were never a thing that happened.
Mm.
And Morrissey was just, like, I don't know, working in a bookstore in Manchester or something.
Yeah.
Like, what would that be like? You know, or like a vegan restaurant or something. Like, if that was just it, Morrissey on that small scale.
Yeah.
Not Morrissey, the grandiose human being that he is.
Yes.
You know, the one year, the Me one tour that he did where he had just his name in giant, like, 12-foot lights behind the band. Like, that's the stage props. My name in lights. That's it.
Because I can.
Because I am. Not because I can, because I am. You know? And in a way, again, I think you do that. Some people become that.
Yeah.
In a constructive way or in a destructive way. And it is, though, it has to be, I think, this willingness to be hurt, too, you know, and risk. And I think risk-taking is a part of that personality set.
And these are the people that are taking the risks, because most people that stay within the lines suffer from fear.
Yeah. Well, so I think people who go out, I think it's that everybody suffers from fear. But I think it's that, because to really put your shit out there and to, like, do stuff, and now that I'm doing this activism stuff and I kind of show up at protests, like...
Kind of show up at protests
for my employer, you know.
Does it make you a little nervous?
It is weird.
Is it cool? I dig it.
Well, it's, you know, it's a weird thing. Like, you know, I don't ever, whenever we do an action or we help somebody else out or whatever... I don't ever expect to get arrested or anything. Like, I'm not that kind of person, you know.
But it could happen.
But, and I'm a big guy, and sometimes authority figures, security guards, TSA agents assess me as a threat and must deal with me, even if I'm just fucking standing there.
Yeah.
So I think about that. So, like, the last time I went to one, the first decision I made that day was... what kind of underwear I should put on in case I end up in county. And that's a very, that's a weird moment of self-awareness. Because from what I hear, it's, you know, if you have white underwear, you get to keep it. Because they can kind of, like, search it easy, and there's no pattern, and there's a message to whitey tighties. It's just, you know. And so I was, like, thinking, like, I better put these on. Because I heard this rumor that that's how it works in county, so I better, in case I end up there. And then I realized, like, this is not normal. Like, most people don't make the decision, like, what, is it cold out? Do I feel sexy? No. It's, if I get arrested, I get to keep these on the inside.
It's practical.
It's very insane,
but it's practical. It's wonderful. Good for you. Good for you. It's very practical.
You can be
insane
and practical at the same time. You can.
I have had people. It was a friend of mine who was in my kitchen probably about 3 months ago, and he's like, "You're the most well balanced, insane person I've ever met." And it was because I gave a friend of mine who was interested in tripping, like doing acid. I said, "Oh no, honey. You're over 40. You don't do stuff like that anymore." They have this wonderful thing called food tripping. All you're looking for is an alternative experience. We'll buy the berries and you can food trip. But no, you don't. You don't do liquid acid at 40 plus. And if you do, you know, so that's it. You know, if you sense what the people want. You know, once you get around, like, the extreme personalities enough, you just get to the core of what they're looking for. And so this friend of mine who was interested in...
Well, that's nicely steering them away. That's sort of like...
That's how you do it. You begin to steer them away, all the crap that you... Because you don't want to be the person that gets blamed.
Yeah.
Because you're going to be the one sitting there going, but I didn't, but I don't, but he...
But again, though, that's weird because that's almost like those, you know, that frat house ethos, you know, make sure they roll over if they pass out.
Yeah.
So they puke out instead of in, you know, kind of stuff. You know, that's sort of the same thing. It's like, party safe, kids, you know.
Right. You do. You know, as you get older and you experience more and you experience more of the type of people and the situations, you begin to put together safe things they can do, you know, like cutters. Anybody that's a cutter. I'm like, go get tattoos.
Yeah.
They're beautiful. You could keep them. Yeah. If you're really going to hack yourself because you can't take the pain, get yourself a tattooist. Or teach yourself to tattoo.
Yeah.
You can inflict pain on yourself all you want to, and nobody's going to say jack because it's beautiful.
Yeah.
And it's your way of release, and that's fine. And sometimes it's, you know, we already have systems in place to hide illness.
Mm-hmm.
Or we misconceive natural human behavior as illness.
Mm.
So it's very, you know, it's an individualized thing, you know. It really is. It's, you know, whatever. If you can get to the core of what they really want,
mm-hmm.
you can find the alternative and give it to them.
Mm-hmm.
There's art. Art is always a great alternative. You know, if somebody cannot deal with reality, give them a fantasy they can live. And make them functional.
Yeah, I think it's fascinating. Or I think for me, it's kind of nice because my life has this overarching structure. The medieval, the wonderfully medieval institution that is the university.
Yeah.
It's not really medieval, but it can feel that way sometimes. Because it is this just wondrously timeless, traditional, and there's like a rule for that.
Mm-hmm.
Or a place for that.
Yeah.
And there's all these things that you don't have to figure out suddenly.
Yeah.
Because it just is there.
Yeah.
This is the time to do this, and this is what you do. And
it's structure.
Structure, yeah. Yeah, that's a wonderful platform for crazy.
Right.
You know, which was, I think, the other great thing that I learned from Kenny Rosinski was sort of, I don't want to say social engineering, but engineering of social situations.
Yeah.
And organization and planning and turning those plans and stuff into a kind of ritual.
Yeah.
You know, we used to have this thing, it was Bungabila. Remember
Bungabila? Yeah, I was saying that word last week.
Yeah, which is was his special name that he got from a Bugs Bunny book, I think he said he had when he was a kid.
Yeah.
For moving small set pieces and large props over to the theater from the rehearsal space before we were getting ready to make the big move.
We were going to Bungabila our gaboozes.
Yes, yes, Bungabila our gaboozes. That's right.
I got them all.
You got them all.
I know them all. And they've never left.
I think I'm going to have to use this microphone at some point. We have to record
all of them. It's going to be like one of those days.
Yeah,
several
well,
days.
You know, it's going to be like one of those American Folkways, like field recording, like box set things. We need that. Because it was, you know, even, it was the thing, that was a man who made language his own.
Yeah.
And that's, how amazing is that, to have that.
Yeah.
And to kind of aspire to, or be, or whatever.
Only the brilliant people make up their own words.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and only the brilliant people, I think, are truly extreme, or dysfunctional, or crazy,
they're
or
extreme personalities.
Whatever it is. Yeah. All right. Anything else you want to add before we shift to the bottom five? No. Okay, I'll take that awkward silence as no!
No.
All right, and now it's time for the bottom five. A series of questions not related to our main topic that are of a surrealistic and or philosophical nature. Are you ready?
Probably not.
Number one. Tell me a happy but somewhat unremarkable memory from your childhood.
My red bean bag. I used to love to lay in my big red bean bag on the floor under an Afghan. It's like the happiest thing.
Mm.
Big red bean bag.
Big red bean bag. Nice. Out of all the possible ways to die, what is the way you least want to die?
Slow suffocation. Any form of, like, whether it be buried alive, drowning, just a slow suffocation.
Yeah, that would suck.
Don't
give drowning a bad rap.
Yeah?
I almost just about, I was like 9 or something, and I almost drowned.
Yeah.
Like, I was down there, and...
Was it kind of peaceful?
Yeah, actually, like, the sunlight was... Cascading through the pool and...
Yeah. But you were 9. You didn't really have that much logic going on. Like, oh shit, I'm drowning!
Well, no, that was happening. But if that was the end, it wouldn't have been so bad. I think, you know, eventually once you kind of, like, inhale enough, it's just getting to that point. When you inhale enough, you're like... And I had inhaled a lot of heavily chlorinated water.
I bet.
And there was this one last kick, I think, of adrenaline.
Yeah.
And I'm a person who, to this day, I could never do a pull-up.
Oh, wow.
And I got to the edge, and I reached up and completely went from down to the gymnastic move where you... You know,
yeah.
Are straight on the balance beam where you're straight up in the air and your arms are, your body is, you know,
yeah.
Still straight and your arms are straight up in, you know, locked position and your whole torso is above the balance beam. I was able to do that. I could not do that ever in my life. And that one moment I was able to do that and then just kind of fall forward and be not in the pool anymore. But no, so drowning, no, but yeah, like being hung.
Yeah.
Submarine accident. Yeah. Buried alive. Yeah. That shit sucks. Buried alive. So there's degrees, man. So don't give drowning a bad rap, all right?
Well, I said slow suffocation. I'm sorry, that's not what drowning is.
Okay. Oh, boy. Number three. Of the living villains of history, whose obituary would you like to write?
Oh, Marquis de Sade.
Living.
Oh, living. Oh,
living
shit.
Villains of history.
Living villains
has
of history.
Has to be somebody... Marquis de Sade. But, living, again, stream personality, that's great. But someone who is alive, breathing today. In the world. Causing evil.
Any one of the Walton family members. Absolutely.
I like it.
I would love to be invited. Any one of them. Their grandchildren. You know.
Yeah.
And there I would love to deliver it to all of those wonderful orphan children that they donate their time to. Yeah.
Yeah. Walton. That's the Walton family. The people who make poverty possible. Right. For a lot of people.
Yeah, the Walton.
All right. Question four. What would your idea of purgatory be like? What would your idea of purgatory be like? I'll tell you mine. I'll tell you mine while you think. What my idea of purgatory is that moment when you're in a public bathroom and it's the paper towel dispenser they have to wave your hand in front of. That moment of waiting for it to dispense too little paper towel for any reasonable human being to use.
Oh, God.
That moment for the foreseeable fucking future. Like, that would be the rest of your life. That feeling of, I've waved my hand, this isn't going to work. Is it working? Oh, that's still not enough. That moment, but never getting the paper towel.
Oh, God.
That feeling, that's purgatory, I think.
Blown a line. That would be my purgatory, that moment that you forget the line.
Oh.
Can you imagine? Forever.
Oh, on stage? I had that happen once. I had that happen once. I was playing the lead in a show.
Yeah.
And I legitimately got to what is happening next. And I was supposed to transition between scenes. Mm-hmm. And the person who I was supposed to speak of next started moving.
Mm-hmm.
And so I turned, and it was the greatest line any human being has ever said on stage. Because it was so genuine. Oh, look, there's Mr. Putnam! Just like, I was surprised to see him. As much as my character was supposed to be, because we were both like, oh, that's the next line. Here we go, I can finish
now,
this
imagine
play.
Living in that moment.
Oh,
for,
God.
Forever.
That's worse than...
That's purgatory,
accidentally
man.
Being seen naked by people or something.
That you or know forcing, what I mean? Me, forcing me to act in a scene over and over again with somebody I completely hate. And maybe even not even personally, but they suck. Like, if I have to do a scene over and over again with somebody who sucks.
Yeah.
Forever. Eternity. Yeah. God. You know. I mean, I may suck. I don't know. But, you know, just...
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Bottom, last question. You ready?
I'm ready.
If you could unmake any invention, what would it be?
The bra. I'd unmake a bra. It's the most uncomfortable, horrible thing anybody ever came up with.
Mm.
And I don't care how many people are like, oh, but I look fabulous in them. Yeah, well, they're, it's wire, and it's, you know, and I don't care how much...
It's a sling.
...fabric. Yeah, it's the over-the-shoulder boulder holder. the bra is a terrible, it was a terrible invention, and it needs to go away. Absolutely.
All right. All right. And on that note, I think that's about it. Our next episode will eventually happen, and it'll be about something. Our homepage, where you can find new and old episodes, is GonnaDiePodcast.com. We're also on iTunes. Follow us on Twitter at GonnaDiePodcast, and We're All Gonna Die on Facebook and Google+. Thanks to Brett Zorick, as always, for the lovely theme music. Later, meets.